This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world. Well, an old friend is back with us today, and we're going deep, very deep indeed, because we're talking to Mike Cleland. His book, Stories from the Messengers, Accounts of Owls, UFOs, and a Deeper Reality. And that deeper reality is what we are seeking to find. This is a companion volume to his first book, The Messengers. I wrote a foreword to this book because I think it is an extraordinary thing that he's doing. He's looking beyond where we are in reality to the outcome of a different language and a different way of thinking. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's an honor.
Well, Mike, let's go back to what inspired you in the first place to notice this connection between owls and the whole close encounter slash contact experience.
Well, I had been reading somewhat voraciously UFO books on the UFO subject. So I knew there was a connection. And I'll say it was right from communion, where there's definitely, that's the one spot that I trace back to the very first connection in popular culture in nonfiction. There's a few fiction things that are quite telling, but that's the first one in nonfiction that I could find, is your account in communion of the owl on the night of, I guess it was Christmas night in 1985. So that was where I definitely remember reading that book. I read it shortly after it came out. It was actually a couple years after it came out. But for myself, I was camping, which I talked about in the interview we did for the first book,
right,
with a friend, and her name was Kristen. And curiously, that name shows up either Kristen or Christopher or Christian or Christine. I have a unusual amount of people, like a statistical anomaly, in my opinion, on how those names are reoccurring in this research.
Would that be? Let's stop there, because that's the kind of deeper we're going for.
Well, the first five letters of Kristen or Christopher is Christ, and there is no more powerful symbolic word, I don't think, in Western culture. That word is laden with a archetypal meaning in our Western culture.
And folks, let's do something here very quickly. Let's get past Christianity and return to Christ. And here's what we need to do. Christianity is a There's nothing wrong with it. It's a good religion as far as I'm concerned. I have no quarrel at all with it. But it is a religion. It is not what happened to the man called Jesus. It is only a reflection of that was built through a political system in the late Roman Empire. Before that, that's the Christ we're going to be talking about when we talk about this subject, the original Christ, the one who put the image on the shroud. And that's no hoax. If you want to know what the latest research is, I'll gladly send you a chapter. I'll email you a chapter of Afterlife Revolution that contains that research. Mike, let's go on. Now,
so in the first book, in the blue book, I was shameless. I was looking for owls everywhere, and I was finding them. And if you look at the image of the shroud, before it's been reversed, right? So you see the image of the man in reverse, right? So you lay you look at the actual image of the shroud itself, and right and left of the elbows of the man are two owls. One is somewhat unclear, and the other one is extremely clear. There is no doubt in my mind that it is an owl. And those owls are the burn marks that occurred when when the shroud itself, I guess it was the chapel, was caught on fire back in like the 1400s or something, and yes, the silver melted onto the, and so those stains look remarkably like two owls.
Now, wouldn't that just be a coincidence?
Well, yes, of course it's a coincidence, but at the same time, I mean, that's a thread, right? And I feel it is my duty, not so much for the research, but more for my own deeper knowing, is to pull on those threads. You know, there may be nothing at all at the end of that, but it is to me, it's remarkable. And the clarity of the image of the owl, especially the one of them, as well as sort of the deeper meaning. I mean, this is the owl is symbolic of death, and I would actually say death and transformation. And there it is, right and left of the figure.
It is very, it's a strange business, because we have first of all, the Shroud of Turin itself is impossible. It wasn't made by any known means. That's been proved. That's what I referred to in Afterlife Revolution. Some recent studies totally ignored by the Anglo-Saxon media in Italy, some really good studies have showed that. But now we have something else happens, something that seems like a coincidence, but the presence of that name in your life seems like a coincidence too. So can you tell us a little bit more about what you think is going on here?
Well, that's what I think is going on here. So what I can say for absolute certain is that there is a connection between owls and the UFO phenomenon. So here's what it was. So when I was working on this initial book, and more even the follow-up book, people, you know, acquaintances who didn't really know that I was so deeply immersed in this UFO stuff would say, you know, Mike, I haven't seen you for a while. What are you working on? What's going on these days? And I say, well, I'm working on a book. And, oh, what's the book about? And I would say, it's about owls. And then they would say, oh, that's interesting. And then right then I would have to size them up and like, do I want to drop the UFO bomb and go down that road? And sometimes I would, and it would have, you know, have a, often a rewarding conversation, but sometimes I just felt like, oh, I can't. And so I would say, it's a book on mythology. And they would say, well, that's interesting. And what mythology of the owl? So in a way, this book is a study of the mythology of the owl. And what I'm finding and what I'm feeling is that these experiences, these ancient experiences that created the ancient mythologies, the folklore that rounded, that created the archetype that's deep seated in all of us of the deeper meaning of the owl, that is still going on today. And it is, you know, what may have taken place in ancient times under different situations created the mythologies. What's happening now, and what I feel like I'm documenting, is the same core experience, though it has been updated to our modern times. So people are still having these powerful, transformative experiences, though they seem to be in the context of with the UFO. And what has happened, and this is all, so I didn't pick owls. I feel owls picked me. And then I'm researching this tiny corner of the larger issue, of the larger body of phenomena, of the larger body of work. And as far as the literature, the experiences, I'm picking the tiniest corner, the owl. And what I'm finding is that this thin little thread that I pull on, I'm not an objective researcher. I'm subjective. I'm ignoring everything else and I'm going just for the owl stuff. And what I'm finding is, in doing so, the stories that emerge point to something deeper than just a metal spaceship with little scientists. It points to a fundamental, for me, and I've tried to express this through story rather through like editorializing in the book, but it points to a deeper reality, that there's something more profound going on just beyond the curtain, the veil that separates us in this physical world, that separates us from some grander reality that is just imperceptible and out of our reach, except it will bleed through and interact with us And I think it interacts with us more often than we dare admit.
We got to take a little break, folks, for the Free Dreamlanders. We'll be right back. My co-author of the book Supernatural and close friend, Jeff Kripal, writes this about this book. Symbol, totem, archetype, conjure, magic, hierophany. These are old words that we thought we knew and that we thought were very dead. Turns out they are not. Turns out they are fiercely alive and silently flying around in the world, mesmerizing, haunting, abducting, or just generally scaring the crap out of people. If you don't believe me, he says, read this book. And then he says, as Mike is all too aware, when one writes or reads about this level of reality with this sense of clarity, reality answers back. And I want to know, and I think my listeners probably do too, just what that means in your life. How has reality answered back?
Oh, well, reality has answered back in the way, for me, on just on a, my email inbox, I'll say it right like that. So I have, if you Google UFOs, owls, you're going to find me because I have, I seem to be the spearhead of this type of research. I've done, I've put myself out there. I've asked for this. I have been archiving it on my website as well as in these books. So presently I'm getting, if anyone in the world from Finland to Kuala Lumpur, if they've had an experience with a UFO and an owl and they're curious about it, they are just a few mouse clicks away from contacting me. And I am getting about one good owl and UFO story a day. I get a lot of, you know, kind of, I get a lot of, you know, cute videos of owls and things like that, but I'm also getting some amazing accounts. And it has left me where I no longer look at reality the same way. I am living in a much richer, much more nuanced world than the one that I started in.
And we want to look at that world too. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about some of these accounts?
Well, the first book was I was arguing to make the point that UFOs and owls were connected. And it took me almost 400 pages to do it. And in doing so, I had to whittle down and edit down a lot of the stories. And it broke my heart to take these rich, complex, multi-layered, often absurd stories and then just snip it all the rest out and only talk, you know, in a paragraph or so, tell the owl and UFO story. In this book, I made up for that because there's 19 separate chapters. Each chapter is a story that is allowed to be told in its completeness, in all its strangeness. And so I made a big effort to not edit out, if that makes sense. So these stories are dense, they're complex. Sometimes they don't have a nice tidy ending, but this is what I'm hearing from folks. Here, I'll just give you a short little one where there was a UFO conference in Northern Maine. Well, actually it was in Portland. And then after the conference, the conference was titled Experiencers Speak. Audrey Starborn was the host of this conference. Oh, you did a documentary with her that I remember that. That was quite good, I thought. And after the conference, everyone went up to Audrey's mother's lake house. And so this was a conference for experiencers. So everyone was an experiencer. And we all sat at the lake. And as the sun went down, they started these kind of manifestation. They wanted to bring in a UFO. You know, they're sort of using the Stephen Greer type techniques. So there's all these people focusing their intention. Little by little, they were all saying, you know, like, I think it's going to be right there. And they all started pointing to the same spot in the sky. It was a little bit, the energy was a little too keyed up for me. And I was there for about an hour. And finally, I just said, I got to go. I just said, no. So I walked away. And as I was walking away, I got, the house was just up a little road from the beach there. And there was this collective sort of, whoa, you could hear everyone say that at the same time. So I ran back down and they all described seeing a bright light in the sky. And it was right where they were pointing. And it wasn't necessarily that exciting of a sighting, but it was profound to me that they were all, you know, they had picked that spot. They were all asking for it and they got it. So afterwards, two women, Carol and Pam, they're lifelong friends. They both have a lot of experiences. They were down at the lake. Everyone else had left. Everyone else had gone back up to the house and they had a little fire pit at the house. And this, at this point, it's about 2 a.m. Now this was autumn, far north in New England at lakefront. It was cold. It was cold and damp and it was gorgeous. It was a beautiful full moon. And they're sitting there. They'd gotten there about 2 a.m. and then they're, you know, just kind of just talking a little bit and they look at their watch and they go, what the? It was 4:30 a.m. It was getting close to 4:30. It was after 4, excuse me. And they were like, what happened? Like, we have not been down here for 2 hours. This did not happen. And they were scared. They both knew exactly what that implied. There was no break in the time. It just felt like they looked at their watch once. They looked at it moments later. 2 hours had disappeared. They walked back up to where they were staying at the house. And what was happening was that there was a lot of tents. There was no room in the house. And there were so many people that people had pitched tents out in the yard. So the tents were butted up right close to each other. So you had to kind of, you know, walk between them to get to the next tent. So they climbed into their tent, which is sort of in the middle of the yard. And I had given a talk at that conference about owls. So there was a lot of owl talk already at that conference. And Jack and Suzanne Chancellor were there at the conference. And Suzanne got a photograph of an owl way off in a tree earlier that day. And Jack saw that. So Suzanne Chancellor was the editor of this book. And she has been interviewed on Dreamland going back, I think, about 3 years now. So Carol and Pam get into their tent. They are freaked out. They're unsettled. They're scared.
All right, free Dreamlanders, we're going to take a little break here, and then we'll be back. Subscribers, just keep right on keeping on. We're back with Mike Cleland. Mike, can you pick it up? Pretty much, it was a rather abrupt break, and I'm sorry for that.
Oh, no problem at all. No problem at all. Carol and Pam were in their tent after having a very profound missing time event, and they were both pretty shaken up. They knew just what that implied. It was just starting to get light in the morning by the time they laid their heads down on the pillow, and Carol quietly asked, she said, let's ask the owl if something really did happen down at the lake. Without any skip, instantaneously, there was an owl hooting, and they were kind of freaked out. Moments later, it was closer and louder, this hooting. And then moments after that, the owl was right above their tent, hooting extremely loud. And then not only that, but there were branches and sticks crashing down on top of their tent. Now, Jack was in the tent next to, he was with Jack and Suzanne. Jack was in the next tent over. So he also got sticks landing down on his tent and a very loud hooting right above him. So he looks at his phone. It's 4:20. He got a direct message from that time count. Earlier that day, I had been sitting with Jack and he was sitting on a lounge chair, drinking a beer and saying, like, I am turning into my dad. His dad had died recently. And he said, I'm turning into my dad. I'm just, it's like, I look in the mirror, I see my dad. I feel his presence here. It's like, I sound like my dad. So he felt like we had that conversation. So, and he was being earnest. He felt it. 4:20, April 20th was the day his dad died. And he knew it right away, instantly. So Carol and Pam ask a question. You know, did something happen at the lake? Let's ask the owl. They get a direct answer, like profound, right over their tent, loud hooting, sticks crashing down in their tent. They get an answer. Jack, here's the owl. Here's the sticks crash on his tent. Here's the owl, looks at his phone, sees the day of his father's death. There's two separate experiences in two tents side by side. One is symbolic of death. The owl is the symbol of death in many cultures. And then right next door, the owl is the symbol of the UFO contact experience. In my opinion, it's a totem for that. So here, side by side, we have both these experiences. Now, that's one of the shortest stories in the book. Jack, Carol, and Pam are all Reiki healers. I have to include that because this is just something that shows up repeatedly in this book, this much more the second book than the first book. The people who are doing healing work. Some of them are straight up nurses, like work in a hospital setting. Others are doing Reiki work. Others are doing intuitive therapy type work, more alternative work. And I cannot separate the healing aspects of this second book and these owl stories. They are somehow intertwined, and it just leaves me, it's very positive to me. It's a sort of benevolent sign, and I'm grateful. I stepped into this book not knowing what the outcome would be, and I'm relieved pleasantly that it didn't turn into a scary gloom and doom book. It is the opposite. I feel it's a very uplifting book.
Well, it is very uplifting. It's an extraordinarily uplifting book. And it has the specific reasons that are it's uplifting, you're kind of touching on right now. This is about two things, this close encounter experience. It's about waking up and it's about healing. And when I say waking up, I go back to what happened to me, which was really hard. It was hard to wake me up. They beat me up until I finally realized and faced the fact that they were there. Facing those eyes is about the hardest thing I've ever done in my life, because they drove right into my own truth that I did not want to face and would rather hide from myself. Now, do you have any sense, Mike, at this point of, and this is probably an inappropriate and impossible question to deal with, why we're like that? Why do we need so much help to wake up?
Yes. So in the introduction, I list four things, like what the owls might mean. Why owls? That's the question. And I say the owls are an alarm clock. And I mean, sometimes all you need is a little nudge on the shoulder to wake up. And sometimes you need a really loud alarm clock. And when none of that works, they send in the owls. And that's kind of my sense. And that's my direct experience. Between 2006, when I had my initial owl experience, and around 2011, 2012, I was questioning my sanity. I this is not an exaggeration. I spent 95% of every waking moment between 2006 and around 2011, when I calmed down a little bit, questioning whether I had gone insane. And that was hard. I mean, I was getting hit with so many owl sightings. The synchronicities were so profound. Every synchronicity, every owl sighting seemed to be somehow tied into this UFO mystery. And I recognized that. And I was gritting my teeth. I was not going to go there. And at some point, I had a confirmation event in 2013. And after that, I just didn't waste my time asking did it really happen? I was at that point, it had been confirmed to me. But yes, I don't have an answer. You asked a question I can't answer. All I can say is that if the owl is the totem of anything, it is the totem of a challenging, transformative experience. That doesn't make it a bad transformative experience, but it is hard work. I mean, if you get an owl totem, like if you get some owl that shows up at a profound, highly charged moment, take a deep breath, because my sense is that this could be a sign that you are in for a challenging life experience. Doesn't make it bad, but it certainly makes it, it certainly is something that is a challenge.
It sure is. I think a lot of our listeners would wholeheartedly agree.
I know some people who are nodding too out there.
Right, I can feel them too nodding. But it is hard, because we're not we're not really, in a sense, ready to, we're not really ready to do this in a way. And I didn't feel ready. And yet later on, I found out I had had the visitors in my life when I was a child, and it was easy then. It was fun. Then all of a sudden, in the middle of my life, in the, it wasn't easy and it wasn't fun. It was terrifying and painful, and I was beat up, and, you know, I could have completely clammed up. You could have decided you were insane. Why didn't you? Why did you come get past that? How?
Well, I think
or have your you gotten
books.
Past
no, no. I would go. So I'm going to say straight up, it was probably your books and a handful of other books that had a huge. I mean, I was traveling on a path that had been walked before me, and I was heartened by other people's stories. I was shameless. I was reaching out to people who've had experiences. Leo Sprinkle was wonderful. I was working with Leo a little bit at that point, and he would say, oh, you know, you should talk to this guy. And he'd give me a phone number, and I would call him up. We'd have these long 6-hour conversations, and it was extremely helpful. So it was helpful to know that I was not alone. And that was extremely heartening. And then also, after my initial set of owl experiences, the question I would ask of people is, have you ever had an odd owl experience? And that's the genesis and the foundation and of this whole set of books here is the people would say, yeah, I have. No one's ever asked me. That's interesting you ask. And they would tell me these wildly beautiful, often irrational stories that, and that's the kind of thing that I don't know how to say it, that floats my boat. I love those kind of mythic tales that people have had. And that's what I have taken a joy in collecting.
And in the second half of the show, you're going to hear some of those mythic tales told. So it should be really exciting. Free Dreamlanders, we have reached the end of our time together. I'm so sorry to lose you. And I do hope that you subscribe when subscriptions are open again. And if that's true now, I hope it is, because we're working hard. This is being pre-recorded. I hope you will come in and join us, because this is a place which is worth being for everyone, not only Close Encounter witnesses, but everyone who has an interest in what is happening to mankind, which is human consciousness is expanding, and on Dreamland and on Unknown Country, you were right on the edge. That's why it's called the Unknown Country, the edge of the world. Thank you for listening. Subscribers will keep on keeping on.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Streber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Streber is your Dreamland host, and I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander. Thank you for listening.